All right, howdy. Howdy, I'm Sam Hagopian. I'm from Colorado State University, and I work with Dr. Jim Klett on irrigation effects on growth, stress, visual quality, and key is evapotranspiration of ornamental grasses. So in general, I'm kind of doing two studies that I'll be talking about today. The first, I'm looking at three different species that are pretty common in the landscape trade under four different irrigation regimes. So that's going to be 0, 25, 50, and 100%, and this is all relative to bluegrass evapotranspiration. So any kind of percentage that I'm talking about today is relative to bluegrass evapotranspiration. The key to the first study, we're really looking at ornamental quality sort of coupled with stress parameters. This has never really been looked at before with ornamental grasses. You know, I guess in layman's terms, how good do they look versus how stressed are they? The second study that I'm looking at one species from the first study under three different irrigation regimes. So I'm just doing 25, 50, and 100% relative to bluegrass, doing the same exact ornamental and stress parameters. And the key to this study is we're actually quantifying the water use, the evapotranspiration of this species in this study. So why is it important? I kind of already alluded to the fact that there's not much information out there about the visual as well as physiological data. There's kind of studies that touch on one or the other, but very rarely can you say the plant looks good as well as the fact that it is not stressed. The other thing is, if you ever go to a garden center or plant grass, usually they'll tell you that ornamental grasses, they're low to minimal water use, or just kind of set it and forget it. But what does that really mean? Nobody really knows. So really quantifying the actual amount of water that they use, as well as the critical stress levels that they can reach, you know. We consider them pretty resilient, but can they go a week without water? Can they go 3 weeks without water? How stressed are they during these periods? That's really the point we want to kick off on. So the first study, here's the kind of three species I'm looking at. I've got Rostelbush switchgrass. This is kind of the larger species. And all of these are really common in the landscape trade and are known to perform fairly well under periods of drought. The second one is going to be Blaze Little Bluestem. This is kind of the really small species that we used. And then we use Korean Feather Reedgrass, which is sort of the medium size. And if you're looking for size, the little white cap in each photo is the same exact size. So the one in the middle is very small. Here's just kind of basic outline of my plots. The bottom one is the first study that I'm talking about, and the upper square is going to be the second study that I will discuss. So in this first study, we're sort of trying to take a slew of ornamental measurements. And I will say, so there was a study that came out where they asked people if they were interested in ornamental grasses and if they would like to plant them in their yard. About 90% of people said yes. Of those 90%, about 10 people said that they actually would, because they thought ornamental grasses wouldn't be beautiful enough. So you get, it's kind of this dilemma. Yes, we would like to plant them, we want to be water wise, but no, they're ugly. So this ornamental measurements, one of the major goals is to quantify the actual aesthetic quality of these plants. So this was all taken from the National Ornamental Grass Trials at the University of Minnesota. And it's sort of, I think it's the best way to objectively quantify the aesthetic quality of these ornamental grasses. So, you know, there's stuff like height with basic growth measurements, floral impact, which is how showy are the flowers themselves, how aesthetically pleasing are they. Landscape impact is sort of standalone impact. If you put that plant in a landscape by itself, what kind of impact would it have? And then color, flowering, all that kind of stuff. So flowering dates, it's kind of important to know all that. In terms of physiology, we're taking the two stress measurements we're really looking at are water potential and infrared canopy temperature to evaluate stress. And then the one thing that I won't really talk about, we don't have the data on it yet, but I'm working on it, is the soil water content within the soil profile. So we really want to know where these plants are actually accessing that water within the soil profile. But that's all I'll say about that, because the data is still in the works. So before I get into the results, I will say that these are just preliminary results. This is 1 year's worth of data, and I'm still waiting for the second year this year to kind of confirm all these results. But so what we see at the beginning, if you look at height on the left, you can really see that 25% irrigation is in the upper bracket of height. So these 25% plants are getting pretty much equal height to their 50 and 100% counterparts. In terms of circumference, it's almost the same. The Panicum brigatum, which is a very vigorous grower, is a little bit larger in the 50 and 100% treatment, but on the whole, the 25% treatment for circumference is also in that upper bracket of plant growth. Not so much for width, but width is not as important of a measurement because circumference kind of does a better job of quantifying the size of the ornamental grasses. In terms of biomass at the end of the year or dry weight, you know, biomass accumulation, you can see that the 25% is in the upper bracket of that. Pretty much the plants receiving 0% have less biomass and everything else is about the same. So as I go, you might start to see a theme and say 25% or get tired of hearing me saying 25%. So yet again, 25% is circled on these beautiful graphs. So landscape impact, that's going to be that rating of how kind of aesthetically pleasing is the plant when you put it alone by itself in a landscape situation. And what you can see is that it's actually higher than the 50 and 100% treatments. So it kind of says that these plants can be beautiful even though they're receiving 75% less water. In terms of floral impact, that's just a rating of the flowers. It's kind of how aesthetically pleasing are the flowers themselves, not the whole plant. And you can yet again see that's also higher than the 150%, which is kind of interesting. So this is kind of the most important part that we really want to know about. We sort of showed that yes, they can be very good looking at 25%, but how stressed are they during this? So what you can really see here, and I've circled yet again 25%, is that on the left, the water potentials. This is a graph from 5 out of the 10 days, so half the days that water potentials were taken, this was the trend. And what you can see is that the 0% is significantly more stressed, which makes sense. Plants receiving no water should be a little bit more stressed. But there's absolutely no difference between the 25 and the 100% in terms of stress. Same goes for the graph on the right. That's just infrared canopy temperature taken at midday, and pretty much the same exact trend between the two graphs. So what you can really see from that is that the 25% plants, you're getting larger plants, taller plants, more biomass accumulation, more aesthetically pleasing plants, and less stressed plants than their 0% counterparts, and all equal to their kind of 50 and 100% counterparts. So that's really interesting and really kind of what we were hoping to find. So sort of piggybacking on top of the first study, I did a mini lysimeter study looking at blaze little bluestem. This will be the smallest species in the first study, and the reason we picked this is in doing the water profiles the water within the soil profile, we found that this plant typically doesn't touch below about 40 centimeters, and we're in 15-gallon pots, so we really didn't want to restrict the rooting area, and that's why we chose this smaller species. So in this one, we kind of took the same exact ornamental measurements, but the key here is that we subjected these plants to dry downs, so pretty much, you know, periods of drought which lasted anywhere between 6 and 12 days. So we wanted to see how these plants performed during that, and during those periods of drought, we would weigh the plant, the soil, and the pot every day to see actually the evapotranspiration that each plant was performing on that day. And so for every single one of those days, you know, after 11 days, we know how much water they're using. We're also taking readings on how stressed they are, because that's kind of key. If they're using less water, are they more stressed or are they equally stressed? So in general, I kind of split these into two different sections. What you can see, and the next graph will sort of follow the same trend. The graph on the left, it's sort of at the beginning of the season in July and at the beginning of August when the plants are just kind of beginning to grow and putting on their initial foliage growth and just greening up. You can see there's no difference in the water use. They all use about the same amount of water. But later in the season, kind of towards the end of August and into September when it starts to get really hot and really dry and the plants are growing and just producing biomass and producing flowers and I should say seeds, but these don't really self-seed very much. That's when the difference starts to occur. So you can see I've circled that 25% group again, And you can really see the blue is going to be the third dry down, and the orange is going to be the second dry down. And you can see that the 25% is lower, and on the second dry down, it's actually even lower than the 50%, so it's using quite a bit less water. The key here, and this is kind of the thorn in the side of all of my work, is going to be the water potentials during these dry downs. So yet again, dry down one and two on the left, you can see, I guess right here, that there's really not very much, there's actually no statistical difference between any of those. So all these plants are significantly, or not significantly stressed, and they're all about the same level of stress. But if you look to where I've kind of starred those blue bars, that's the dry downs later on in the season when they're kind of producing those flowers again. And you can see that these plants are significantly more stressed. So if you sort of look at the last slide, you can see that they're using less water, but that's having an effect on them. And the day number is kind of, as it goes, it's looking at the day number. So this is day 6 right here, and this is going to be day 11. And you can see that after about 2 weeks without water, these plants are significantly more stressed, which can have a deleterious effect on their long-term health, which is something that I'm starting to see this year in the second year of data. So a very basic summary of the second study, you can see that the 25%, they're using less water, but during drought, they're significantly more stressed, which is kind of the only problem with all my data being very nice and kind of congruous. So I guess just basic overview of everything that I've talked about. The 25%, you're going to have larger grasses. They're going to be higher visual quality, more biomass accumulation, and have the lowest levels of stress. They're also going to use significantly less water, which means a lot for, you know, homeowners as well as people who produce these plants on a massive scale. You know, you can reduce water by 75%. The key is that the 25% grasses are more stressed during those periods of drought. So what that really means is that if you're in an area where you have irrigation mandates, you know, in the middle of August, you can't water for 3 weeks, this is probably a program that you do not want to adopt because, you know, it can have deleterious effects once you go over that 1 week without water. You can start to see effects for the rest of that plant's life. Or so I think. I'm not 100% sure on that yet. So like I said, I mean, we really want to be one of the first studies to couple the physiological quality with the ornamental quality. I think it's a really good way to sort of work with industry professionals as well as homeowners. Homeowners are really, it's really important to them how good does the plant look. So quantifying that was really important to us. And then finally, we want to spread the ornamental grass love. I don't think that ornamental grasses get enough love. So they're amazing, and we should do more research on them. And with that, I'll take any questions. Yep. Yes.
How close is that to when the plant should be going dormant for winter or more Colorado?
I would say that we probably got another 3 to 4 weeks out of the plant before it kind of began to go dormant.
So is that a normal time of year when you would see a natural drought? You know, do you have less rain at that time of year?
Yes, I will say that the last two are pretty much when the season gets... Early on is when it's nice and wet and hot, but at the end it's pretty much hot and dry and there's absolutely no rain.
So what is the impact on the plant's ability to overwinter then?
So that's what I'm looking at this year, and that's what's really important to sort of say that these results are actually real, because, you know, we'll see if this year, if those 25% plants, some of them could die and never come back, or they could, you know, look just as good as some of the other ones. So that's really what this second year is for.
I'm in East Tennessee, and September is our wettest month.
Okay. It's probably a lot of lodging then.
How many plants did you have of each kind, and how did you, was the blade seed or vegetative propagation?
So these were all vegetatively propagated, and there were 5 of each species in each treatment, so a total of 20 of each species.
And Thank you so much. We're going to move on to our next.